looking for beavers. All right.
Hey, you see that?
My dick's asleep.
That is exactly what the beavers would want.
And we're back with Beaver Rodeo. We are your hosts, George and
Jen.
Good job, Jen.
I know, I did it. I did it, guys.
So proud of you.
Yeah, I listened to her speak, and Jen seemed to not realize she had to say her name, by the way.
We do preference, though. We really do. But that's a part of Jen's cute personality.
I get distracted way too easily.
I like, Jen, that you didn't even argue. I was like, yep, that's for me. I forget to say my name. That's what happened.
I think last episode, I had like an identity crisis too. I just said like my online persona name. And then I was like, wait, that's not what we do here.
Yeah. I don't know what episode you listened to, but in the first episode, we kind of actually go over how Jen's memory isn't the best.
My MO for whenever I go on a podcast is listen to the last episode. Yours was the Star Wars one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, so what would have been our actual first episode if we had ever released it?
Oh, God.
Nice. Well, today's episode is a topic that is brought to us by social media. Social media, because who needs biased news anchors when you can get your friends who have biased information with zero sense of spell check? In any case, I saw a post on Facebook the other day, and it was one of my friends going off about like how they argue some rappers had sold out and whatever. And it kind of brought me thinking that idea of selling out and how it's something I've always found is like it's overused and used improperly. And well, before we go any further, you guys have heard there's a third voice with us. And this is someone who's has 20 years of experience of dealing with musicians, actors, comedians, a plethora of celebrities. And you can usually catch him busting balls with Big J Okerson over at the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, if you don't know. It's like, let's have a warm and juicy welcome for Ralph Sutton.
Hey now. Thank you.
So I actually saw a post that you had put the other day up on one of our podcasting groups. And I think it was because you had just recently had Spencer Grammer on your show. And you were talking about how you really liked how the show went and you wanted to pop it on, you know, despite mm-hmm. what you expected and everything. And knowing what you've done through with your career, I figured you'd have a great take on this idea of musicians or actors or comedians even like selling out in this industry. Mm-hmm. And honestly, what were your thoughts in general of like, what is selling out to you before we even get deeper into it?
I will say this, you are correct. I've been in this industry for a very fucking long time. Before doing podcasting, did radio for 18 years and had a show on about 100 stations across the country. Before that, I ran rock clubs in New York City. And before that, I was a nightclub promoter, strip club DJ, and a bunch of other weird shit. But I have been involved in music in one way, shape, or form for most of my life. And I would say selling out is a weird thing. I look at it differently than what I think most people look at. Most people confuse success with selling out. Like a lot of people said, Green Day sold out when they blew up. But if you listen to the Green Day records, they all kind of sound the same. It just what happened was that sound became popular. Does that mean they sold out? I don't think so. It just means that they were ahead of the curve. They had a vibe that eventually the rest of the universe got caught up with. You know, then you could also argue some people feel like Metallica sold out when the Black album came out because it was a very commercial record. But with them, the reason why that happened, they started working with a new producer. They started changing. They had a death in the band. They started maturing with who they were with and their sound changed a little bit. Does that mean they sold out? I don't think so. To me, what a sellout is, I know guys in bands that go after the sound of the moment. So they're a rock band, but rock rap becomes popular. So their next album is Rocky Rappy, or folky rock becomes popular. So they start writing that way and they're chasing the trend as opposed to doing what feels naturally. To me, that's a sellout. That's someone that just wants to go after whatever's popular. It means nothing to them in the hopes of trying to become famous again. Right.
Right. I agree.
I've known a lot of bands that have done that over the years. Conversely, I've known bands that did the exact opposite, where they wrote a record that they thought was so good, but because of their name and what they were associated with, they didn't want it to be released under their name. So they changed the name of the band so that they would be looked at as a new band. as opposed to having any sort of predisposed ideas of what it's going to sound like because it's that band, you know? And that's too. And I think that's like an anti-sellout. It's like, oh, we don't even want to be judged by our past success because of that fact. So to me, it's only when you're going after a hit. If a hit comes, that's not a sellout. And same thing with directors who had five or six movies that just did okay, and then one movie blows them up and they're called sellouts. It's not a sellout if they didn't change what they were doing. Just the industry caught up with you.
Yeah, no, actually, I agree with pretty much all of that for sure. Because I think that's been my struggle with it whenever I get into a conversation about those kind of things. Like I remember we used to live back in Massachusetts way back when, and I had a friend who I'd go to like the death metal shows with and everything. And I mentioned like, oh, the new Slipknot album's out. I can't wait to get it. And he's like, oh, Slipknot, they're such sellouts. Yeah. And I'm just like, what?
They
just, like,
what happened was that they became popular. You know, when that album broke and they were on Conan, everybody thought that they were sellouts. And I was like, no, this is not music that would normally be played on Conan O'Brien. They're just so that you have no choice but to put them on. And then the other part, the other argument that I have as well is like, if you're a musician or an artist in general, you're allowed to be influenced by things. So you take a band like, I interviewed them recently on SDR last year, Papa Roach, okay, that started out deeply ensconced in the rap rock world. But then if you listen to their new stuff, it sounds nothing like that. And you talk to the singer, Jacoby, and he's like, yeah, I just started liking other stuff. Like, can you not like it? Should you be AC/DC and make sure every set album sounds exactly the same as the album?
Yeah.
And AC/DC, don't get me wrong, I love AC/DC, but it is very formulaic. Just like, you know what you're in for if you buy a new Iron Maiden record. It's going to sound like Iron Maiden. And that's great too. But I am fine with an artist like just wanting to explore different genres. That doesn't mean that they're selling out. It means that they maybe, like, look at Tommy Lee. I don't know how old you guys are, but Tommy Lee, obviously from the band Motley Crue, then put out a solo record where he was singing and playing guitar, and it was, you know, kind of poppy rock alternative. Then he became a DJ for house music. I mean, it just, he's an artistic guy. Let him explore his art. Who gives a shit? But I think that the problem is, we as fans associate so much with what they did. Most humans fear change. That's why chain restaurants do well. They go to a new country and they go to a fucking Bennigan's because they don't want to try local food. So in that respect, it's what it is that people fear change. But if you're an artist by trade, usually you want to be influenced. And I think that's what makes art fantastic, be it whatever genre of art.
Yeah, well said. I totally agree. Yeah, exactly.
That's why I get
paid. It's like you've been inside of our heads. Yeah, it's, for me, it's always been one of those things where I look at the industry. It's like all of us come from small towns with nothing, and we want to chase that big dream of being something more. Something more comes with celebrity, fame, money. It gets all those things tacked onto it. So I kind of feel like you don't just become an actor or a musician and these things without that caveat of the money that comes with it and all the celebrity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that
it's like nobody, it's a part of it.
Nobody started a band to be home by themselves. They started to have a life and be social and go out there. I mean, there are some people I've met over the years that I believe are just truly, you know, troubled artists that had something in them that needed to come out. But that's few and far between. I think Gene Simmons, you know, said it best, where, yeah, we started the band to get laid. That's why we did it. And that's probably the reason why 95% of the guys that picked up a guitar, why they picked up a guitar in the first place.
Yeah. And you mentioned Gene Simmons is a great example too, I feel, because like Kiss has been used as possible sellers because of the fact that everything can be bought with Kiss on it, from lunchboxes to carpets, everything. There is no limit to what Gene Simmons will put Kiss on. Yeah. And it's just like, why not if you can?
Right. Sure.
Like, I just had the Ozzy's guitarist, Zach Wilde, we had on my show last week. And Black Label Society now has alcohol. They have hot sauce. They have Viking hats that say Black Label on it. Would you say he's a sellout? I would say he's feeding his kids. You know, these days,
people
don't buy records. You know, they stream. So you're coming up with ancillary revenue streams because that's how you survive. It used to be that a band would sell records. Touring paid back the record label and merch was extra money. Now merch is how they survive. So I don't see it as a problem at all. I don't know. Most people that shit on bands for selling out are because they're probably disgruntled musicians themselves that have never made it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'd sell it for a fucking sandwich. So it's like, whatever. I don't understand the mentality of just not being able to accept these new opportunities to just be out there and spread your stuff. Because guaranteed anyone in that position would probably do the same.
Yeah, but I also understand, you know, coming from a guy that when I liked my bands in high school, nobody knew who they were, and you felt like you're part of a secret society. So that I understand that, like, there's that old joke about you know, hipsters are known for label, you know, as soon as a band becomes too famous, they don't want to even think about them, and they all want to love a band that you've never heard of. So the old joke is, how many hipsters does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is, don't worry, it's a number you never heard of. Because that's the idea. They don't want anyone to know their band. And the second someone else knows the band, they've lost interest. That's just, I think, more superficial than anything else. You should want your band to be successful if you want to hear new music from them.
Yeah.
I think the best was Radiohead when after, I forget which one, or what, after the album, after OK Computer, I forget which one it was, they decided that fuck record labels, we are putting out the album. And what they did, which was phenomenal, you guys might be too young to remember this, they put it out technically for free. And they said, you pay as much as you want, nothing or $1 million, there's no price on it. You decide when you buy it. Understand that if we don't make any money at this, we're never going to put out another album again. And they ended up selling 1 million copies, averaging $5 a copy, but it 100% went to them and nobody else. So it was like the most successful self-published album of all time. But very few bands can do that.
Right. That's incredible.
Yeah, I do remember that when that happened. Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm surprised more bigger bands didn't do it like that. Because it just showed the power that they have.
I mean, nowadays, like I could tell you from Gas Digital, we produced two comedy specials, one for Dave Smith, one for Luis Gomez, and they both went to number one on iTunes. But a year later, from 2017 to 2018, is when we released them apart. And in that year, streaming became far more the norm, might have been 18 months later, than buying. So it was funny because even though the second album that we released streamed way more, but sold a little bit less, it still went to number one because people just stopped buying. Now it's all about streaming, and that's where you make your money, is from streaming. So I don't think anybody could do it anymore, because who the fuck buys it? I don't remember last time I bought anything, like a DVD, or if I want to see something, I go to YouTube or I go on Spotify.
Right.
I can't remember
the last time I bought anything.
Either. I used to, when I was doing radio, I would get all my music for free. You know, we were on a bunch of stations and bands wanted to get played. But if I heard a song from a band, I'm like, fuck, I really like this, I would go out and buy the record solely to support the band, even though I got it for free already.
Yeah, I find like I was very much the same way with that. And something you had mentioned earlier had me thinking of, you're talking about hipsters and how they're so happy to have this thing that's theirs. It's like, I remember a band I discovered like back in the day, they were called Must, had like one album. And I was so excited after getting this album because I got it for like, what, $9 or whatever at a Strawberries when they were still a thing. And I was like, I was telling everyone about it. I was like, I can't wait for more people to know about this band. Now, like, if you look up this band on like Google, you're going to find up the word like Must means this or whatever. They don't exist to the world. They never existed at this point. They're not a thing.
And I just Googled it while you were saying it. There's a band called Must that had a song called Hey Mum. Is that it?
No.
their album was called Androgynous Jesus.
Oh, actually, okay, maybe they did have it. I think that was actually it.
Well, then I found them with one Google search.
Okay. Hey, I don't mind being corrected on things. All right. Things have changed. Cause like I want to say a couple of years ago, I tried looking for them. Cause I was like, man, I wonder if they ever had a new album, and there was nothing. I couldn't find anything.
I was the king of trying to find obscure rock bands when we were running a rock club in New York called Limelight. And we would always try and find cool new bands. Cause if you were promoting a nightclub, the only way I would get a band to play my club was if I found them before they were big. So I would constantly buy obscure records. And now unfortunately, my CD collection got destroyed, but there are so many bands that their music does not exist anymore, and I'll never hear them again, which is upsetting.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's what happened with me, is that we moved out to California like years back, and I gave all of my CDs to my father. Cause I was like, I have an MP3 player. What do I need these anymore for? Of course, MP3 players die out eventually.
The single Moving On by Must has 220,000 views. So I guess other people know them.
The other Bostonians.
They need to come back. All right. Probably. Yeah.
Aren't they a bunch of fucking sellouts, huh?
Honestly, shame.
But yeah, this has always been a thing it's really kind of like, it's annoyed me. Like, I've gotten friends like talk shit about like Maroon 5 in a conversation we had the other day. And it's like, I just can't listen to them anymore. It's like, after The Voice and everything, it's like, Adam Levine, he freaking sold out. And I was like, you know, Adam Levine came from money, right? Like, his parents had money. And he didn't have to be in a band.
Sounds the same. So, you know, the first record and the new record could be on the tracks could be on either one. So how is that a sellout? He's just good looking, in good shape, and on a very popular TV show. So who gives a shit? I would say, I really believe it's got to be at least 60 to 70% of the people that call another band a sellout are jealous. I really believe that.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I actually think you could argue that it's more of a sellout to keep putting the same sounding music out once you become popular, because you know that it's what made you popular. You know, in a way, like, we'll take Nickelback as a great example. Every one of their records sound exactly the same for the most part. People love to shit on Nickelback because they, you know, they became so popular. But I remember that first record came out. It's one of the few albums, and I think maybe one of only two rock records that sold over 10 million albums. So at the time, they did something right. You know what I mean? How can you now shit on them just because they got so popular? But fuck, 10 million people own that album in the United States. So that's a lot. That's like, you know, almost a full percent of the country. Or at the time, it was probably 1% of the country.
Yeah. And they're a great example too, because like, I've seen interviews with Chad Kroeger, and he fully admits, it's like, yeah, our writing process, we're pulling stuff out of the air. And like, it's just whatever happens, happens. It's like, all right, this is a song about a picture. All right, boom. You know, I don't give a fuck. It's like, we have fun doing what we're doing. I'm having a great time. And I think that's where it matters. Like, if you still love the music you're making, then it's okay. Like, for me, it's about self-integrity, I think. Like, Nirvana is one of those few bands where I think has that they admittedly sold out. He said they sold out. I'm like, all right, you guys became a sellout band because you think so. Then I can understand. Funny. But if you're evolving,
people seem to forget with Nirvana, with that last record, the one with Heart-Shaped Box on it, the name escapes me right now. But that album wasn't really selling that well. And then he died and it started to sell really well. So like, we were already on a downturn in popularity because that album wasn't doing that well. And then when he died, it went crazy. So I don't know if they were selling out successfully at that point, you know, but it definitely is a weird vibe for them. They were, it's amazing when I remember the joke was after he died, what has four legs and works at McDonald's was the rest of Nirvana. But then, you know, what's his name became a megastar with the Foo Fighters. That's a guy that's genuinely gifted in songwriting. I mean, it's amazing.
I love him.
Oh yeah. Dave Grohl he's one of the human beings. Like, I hope I get to meet him one day because he just seems so down to earth. And he's a musician. He's a musician and through and through.
He plays everything and sings. And that's a guy, like, it's always, I interviewed this guy recently. His name is Ronnie Radke from a band called, he was in Escape the Fate, and now he is in a band called Falling in Reverse. And
they have
a very big song. It was like number one, called Popular Monster. And he is just this guy that is like your classic tortured musician, always getting into fights, having drug issues, never could control himself, plays every instrument, writes like really emotional lyrics. He was just made to be a singer, you know, and he's been in prison. He just his whole story is a rock star through and through. So when he blew up with this song, I could not be happier. It's like, this guy fucking deserves it. This is, and it's all very, you listen to his music, it's all very much on brand with what he does.
Yeah, no, I actually know exactly what song you're talking about because I just discovered it on my Spotify the other day. Yeah, it's really good.
Funny, it's like, I listened to a cable, you know, on Spectrum here in New York. They have a channel that just plays new rock music, and I listen to it a lot to find new bands I don't know of. And this is like the third or fourth record for Falling in Reverse, and Escape the Fate had several records as well. And I was like, well, what the fuck was that? There's such a great record. And then I used every single connection I had to get an interview because he doesn't do interviews. And I got to go talk to him at Irving Plaza. Sorry, not Irving Plaza. Webster Hall, one of the venues here in New York. And we just had a great interview. And now, because of that, he started doing interviews again, which I take full credit for.
Nice.
Oh, very nice.
How long have you two been doing the show together?
This show we just started actually in
March, since quarantine. March.
I said like the episode, so yeah. I didn't know if it was like you rebranded or what. I didn't know.
Well, I've been hosting a Famous Monsters podcast for like 3 years now. And so I do that show still, actually. So that's why, like, when I talk about doing like, all this stuff for so long and doing these shows, that's why.
So, and you two are married, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been
married? Yes. Yeah.
Since.
It's good that we both don't answer quickly. So I'm safe.
2010?
It's 10 years.
So did this quarantine bring you closer, or do you want to kill each other?
We've always been like, we're that like the anomaly couple that doesn't want to like murder each other. Like, cause we've always worked together in the same workplace since we've met.
Oh,
and like we just mesh well together. So it's like, we're just completely in sync.
I've heard that divorces are like going through the roof right now, where divorce attorneys are trying to keep it.
I can imagine.
And not only divorce, but like I have several friends that were engaged right before the quarantine, and they're all breaking up now, which is really funny to me.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
I asked a few friends, I live alone and I'm single, and I asked a couple of my friends, and they both had the same exact answer, which was, I said, I wonder, now that it's 3 months that I've been doing this, is it worse to be single and home alone by yourself, or would it be better to be with a significant other for the last 3 months? And they both had the same answer, which was, if you were with someone for the last 3 months, you wouldn't ask that question. You know, it would be better to be single.
Oh, God.
Any kids?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
What are you fucking kids waiting for? Jesus Christ.
That's exactly who we're waiting
working on
for.
It. Quarantine, baby. No, I think, like Jen said, like we luck out. We are a rarity. People don't believe that we never fight and nothing is ever wrong. We've actually always worked together, like
that's
too.
That's in the bio as a quote of the guy that stabbed and murdered his wife.
We never fought, except for that one time.
He was such a nice guy. Everyone thought he was great. And then he's like, oh, but he murdered his wife. Wow. We never would have guessed it.
Oh, my family's from New York. We know how to cover things up. We're okay. I know somebody who knows somebody.
And so you know Big J. Okerson as well, I assume. You said something about that, correct?
Well, I know of his work. Okay, I don't know him personally. Right, yeah.
He officially, here's secret knowledge that nobody knows. He officially had the COVID virus. He took the antibodies test and he has the antibodies for it. Pretty crazy.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't. Wow. We went and got it the same doctor, same day, and he and his girlfriend had it and I didn't have it. And I was sick as a dog in January. I thought for sure we both would have bet money. We talked about it ahead of time. I was going to bet for sure that I had it, and he was going to bet for sure that he didn't have it. And then it turns out that we were 100% wrong for both of us.
I mean, no offense to Jay. I don't know him, but I've seen enough of his comedy that he wouldn't be safe. Yeah. But that's too bad. I hope he's okay.
He's out of his system. Right? Like, he had it and didn't even realize it.
Crazy thing about it. It's like, how many of us have had it and beat it and didn't even know?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me. I think I really like I had literally every symptom in January. I couldn't taste anything.
Oh, God.
I couldn't smell anything. I couldn't breathe. I was dizzy. It was every single one of them. And it lasted a month. And I thought for sure I had it. But apparently I did not have it. Apparently I could still die. God. Jay can't, but I could.
I think situations like that, though, is why you have people who are skeptics of like, this isn't a big deal. It's like people get it and it goes away. It's not a problem at all.
So I am someone who doesn't normally get involved on nonsense on social media. Like you could love Trump, you could hit whatever it is. I don't care. I never respond to anybody. But with this, especially being locked up for so long, I have lost my mind on people and really got into crazy fights for people to think that Bill Gates created this in a lab in 2007.
Oh my God. You know,
it's so many crazy stories. It's insane.
It's like, I'm done with computer viruses. I need to get to organic viruses. We're in the age of organic.
People legitimately believe that. Legitimately believe that. Him and Fauci consorted together in 2000-something, early 2000s, to create this virus. It's insane.
How do you even come up with bullshit like that? I feel like I'm not creative enough to think of something like that.
As someone who dated a flat earther briefly, I can tell you that these people don't care what type of proof you give them. The answer is, I don't believe that, so it's fake news. I believe this, so it's real news. And you're never going to change their mind.
So how big were they?
The fake news or the boobies?
Well, she was, exactly.
She was the hottest girl I ever dated, and so I just put up with it. And I remember saying to her a few times, I wish you weren't so stupid because I really am so attracted to you.
It's like, yeah, the earth is flat. At least you're not flat. At least you're not flat. That's all that matters right now.
She was literally one of the hottest girls I've ever dated, and I just dealt with it because she was so hot. But man, if she really had some stupid ideas. We went to, what's that movie, Arrival, together? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it. And in the movie, towards the end, a giant spaceship lands on Earth.
Yeah.
As like a big moment in the movie. And she leans over to me. I wish she was joking, but she was not. And she said, you know, the real spaceship that came was a lot bigger. I was like, God damn it.
It's like, please stop talking.
You know what that makes me think of? Our old job of Famous Monsters, we also ran a bunch of conventions, like the Comic-Con kind of conventions. And we actually did the first year of Alien Con, which is like the History Channel ancient aliens show.
You believe
that's been going around?
I bet. Maybe she went.
So like we
maybe she was one of the emails we got.
But I remember going. Remember, Jen, like we put together that show, and so many people who were like into aliens would come up to us because we're the organizers, and they're just like, so we're so happy that you guys put this together for us, because now I can share these pictures that I have. And you see this picture right here? It'd be like this distorted whatnot or whatever. Like, you know, like back in the day when you get your disposable cameras and the film would come back and there'd be like that solar flare kind of thing on your picture. It was like that. It's like you can see in there, there's the alien touching my shoulder. And you have to stand there with a smile like, yeah, okay, thank you for your $50. Okay, keep going. It's like, that's the first thing I think of.
I think it's obvious that I think you're crazy if you don't think aliens actually exist. But to think that they've been hanging out and just silent is really insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's ignorant. I guess that's my boss, like, because he's very religious. And it's just like, he can't fathom sometimes that there could be aliens. So it's like, it's ignorant to think that there's no other life in the universe. But if they're going to visit us, like, I agree with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Why would they go to Oklahoma at some random farm? Why wouldn't they come to New York?
If they're smart enough to come here, they're going to know where the main center is. Like, they'd come to D.C. and go talk to the leaders. I mean, that's what they would do. You know, it's like, it doesn't make any sense. But I mean, the people that legitimately believe there's aliens living in Area 51 right now, it's insane. Mm-hmm. It's just the amount of people that would have to keep a secret for all these years. When you find out when any celebrity's cheating on each other, it would come.
Right? Yeah. Especially nowadays. Yeah. With how much resources we have, like, everyone has their camera phones out at all times.
Somebody would say, something. I'm going to make a payday and I'm going to release this information. It would happen. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. And it's also, look, I hate to shit on religion, but it's the same thing that people believe. There's a dude up in the sky that created everything, but he cares if I eat pork. That insanity is why these people believe these things. That's what it boils down to. You know, like, religion made sense when we didn't have science. But when we find out understand the truth behind rain, oh, it's not God weeping. There's actual reason for it. It amazes me that still people want to hold on to the fact that there's some dude up in the sky. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I hope someday we're going to have our own religion episode, because it's definitely something that I grew up with quite a bit. I know it probably, I don't know, it'll gain us some fans or lose some fans. We'll see. But like I was raised with the Bible in my household and everything. And my mom was like, this is the Bible. This is what God's about. Believe it if you want to. No pressure. And we always believe in something.
Believe in the idea, like, that we don't know. And there's probably an interconnectivity to the universe that we will never understand. But to think that it's some dude, it's like me looking at ants and getting angry that they're not walking in the way that I want them to walk. It doesn't make any sense. So if I create the entire universe, why would I care about what these little things in this universe do? That's so petty and disgusting. If I'm that person, if I'm the God and I care what you do, I'm a horrible person.
Yeah, agree. It's like, how could you worship something like that? I'd always come with the argument with any Bible friend I'd have. I'd be like, so we believe in dinosaurs, right? You're like, yeah, because we learned it in school. Okay. So if there was creatures of great and small that God created with Adam and Eve, dinosaurs had to have been there. How the fuck did they survive that shit? Yeah. It's like no human would have survived the dinosaur.
It's crazy. It's really, I don't know. I understand it, but it boils down to the same reason why conspiracy theories exist. People need a sense of belonging. We are not, no, we don't do well under quarantine. This is proven. We don't do well isolated. So people need to feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves. And religion is one of those things. Sure, the biggest reason for religion is control. And that's why we did it back then. But at this point, anyone that still believes in a legit, like, oh, I can't eat meat on, you know, for Lent or whatever, or I was born Jewish, so I know more, a little bit more about that religion. But like to think that I can't eat meat and milk, or I can't have to keep kosher, or God is going to get mad at me, is insane. It's just insane.
Yeah, that's like, it's the Sabbath. Right.
And then when you look at, so in the Old Testament, it actually says how you should handle slaves. And then I say to my religious friends, so you're okay with the idea of slaves? And they say, oh, no, I don't believe in that. I'm like, okay, so this is the word of God, but now you're picking and choosing the things you believe in. Mm-hmm. It does not make any sense. And then I got into an argument with another friend who was adamantly against gay people, because he said, you know, it says that a man should not lay with another man in the Bible. So I know that God doesn't want, you know, homosexuality. And I said, well, I happen to know for a fact that God is down with homosexuality. There's no doubt in my mind. God loves gay people. And he goes, there's no way to know that. It's not possible. And I said, exactly. There is no way to know. You know.
Well, I got to say, like, with gay people, like, I'm totally all for a man be with a man, woman be with a woman, because we have enough people in this world as it is. If they can't reproduce, that's less people reproducing.
It's funny. I've had arguments with people that think gay is a choice. Like, who would choose to have a life where people shun you? Like, why would that be something you would choose? You don't, like, pedophiles don't choose to be pedophiles. I'm sure if they could turn it off, they would, but they don't, they can't. And that's fucked. Thank God I wasn't wired that way. Or I'd be, I mean, if that's what turns you on, you're fucked for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Or not, but you get it.
Yeah. Well, or you're, someone's getting fucked. Crazy. Yeah.
I think we got off topic on spelling out, by the way. I apologize.
It happens.
It's okay. That's kind of our thing. But since I see like you're very much on the same page as us, there's a question I actually had that is slightly correlated with the main topic. It's not so much about selling out, but it definitely has to do with music and how people are are treating it these days. I think it was just actually yesterday. I was on my Spotify looking for some tunes and everything, and there was a song like by Lady Gaga with R. Kelly, and I really wanted to hear that song for some odd reason. And I was like, "What? Where did that song go?" I'm looking through all the albums, and I couldn't find it. And then so I was like, maybe it didn't exist. Maybe I made it up. Maybe R. Kelly never did a song with Lady Gaga. So I start Googling. It's like, no, it's right there. And I come to find that all his songs are taken off of pretty much every streaming site, which I remember hearing about, but I guess I just kicked it out of my head and pretended it never happened. And it had me at a place where it's like, Land of the Free, and I'm not free to listen to whatever the hell I want to right now. Like,
still buy it. Right? I would imagine you could still buy it. But the thing is that, and I think people make this confusion all the time. Like, they get mad that YouTube or Facebook or Twitter is taking things off because it doesn't abide by their guidelines or whatever. These are all Spotify. They're all private companies. They can do whatever the fuck they want. You know that. So I think that people confuse that a lot because they're so omnipresent that how dare they take my, you know, that stupid plandemic video that got taken down. Like, how dare they take that? They could do what the fuck they want. They want to take it down. For me, the more important thing is, can you separate the art from the artist? You know?
Yes, but again, exactly my point.
I can say that if I'm the owner of YouTube or I'm the owner of Spotify and I don't want his music on my platform, I allow that idea. We live in a country where you can.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think my issue was the fact that people aren't, like you said, they're not separating the art from the artist. You know, like, just because that person did something bad doesn't necessarily mean that the rest of us now have to stop liking the music they put out there. Because I find that there's not a line that people are drawing. So like R. Kelly's an example, like, all right, no more R. Kelly. But I don't see people hating on, like, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis are still on Spotify, and that's okay. So we have people who can marry people who are under their age or people who are in their family. That's okay. You can do that.
Take down old philosophers because they all used to have sex with kids. I mean, you know, where you line.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's like I talk about that a lot, this concept a lot on my other show, which is called Good Sugar. And we try to look at philosophers. We look at self-help gurus and things like that and see how real they are and how honest they are. And, you know, so in music, I think when your art form, like you liking music, The liking your music has nothing to do with your belief system. I don't care about that. Like, it's also weird, on a side note, when musicians feel the need to get political. Like, I don't care what Donald Trump's musical tastes are. Why should I care what a musical person's political field is? It makes no sense to me. But on a side note, this self-help guy, and he was talking about how we live in a world right now where it's very unique because both men and women have equal views in social media, equal voices in social media, and they can both make change. It's the first time in history that that's been true. I don't know if that part's true, because I think if you go back to when prior to Christianity and women had much more prevalent voices, but Christianity kind of put a stifle on that. But even if you put that aside, this guy was on stage wearing traditional Muslim garb, talking about equal rights for men and women. Then it's kind of hard to listen to what you're talking about, because you're in a religion that has Sharia law that doesn't respect women. So it's hard to believe what you're saying if you're obviously completely going against what you're saying by your religion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I said, my equivalent was me going on stage in blackface talking about how we need to have racial equality. No one's going to take me seriously.
Yeah,
for sure.
Although
it's definitely
down to try it.
Well, at the same time, like, it's, you look at Robert Downey Jr., you know, in Tropic Thunder, like, obviously he's not a racist, but he was in a comedy movie where it was poking fun at it. So I think if it's in the the right vein, maybe you can pull it off.
Just discovered that movie this week, because I've seen it everywhere in this past week. Like, some social justice warriors just found it on Netflix. Oh, but boy, there's been a lot of outrage about that. And also, it's weird. It's like, it was at a time when it was not bad. If he'd put out that movie today, you should have an uproar of it. You know, just like people get upset about Christopher Columbus because he killed all the Native Americans, although really all the people in the Caribbean and, you know, the south of here in South America, but really, you know, under Native Americans as well. But that's what was done back then. You went there and you raped and pillaged and you took over. You know, that's part of what it was. If he was the only guy that did that, maybe we should have a problem with it. But that, I mean, Cortez is famous for saying burn the ships, because then they were like saying, we ain't going back. We're killing everybody or we die trying. That was the way it was done. But now they're changing the name of Columbus Day to Native American People's Day. Is the dumbest thing in the world. That's what he did, what he was supposed to do. He didn't do anything weird. That's what was done back then. I'm done with my rant. I apologize.
Yeah.
It was more than welcome. I'm with you. Like, it's one of those things, like, I think people, like, Jen's Vietnamese, like I said, I'm Puerto Rican, and there's this expectation that because of what we look like and who we are, that we have to naturally support this, that idea of what you just said, of, like, you know, being against Columbus. It's like, if Christopher Columbus didn't do what he did, I don't think I'd get to be an American. I wouldn't be in the position I am in today. You know, maybe I would be still on the island, you know, or maybe I'd be someone's bitch. I don't know.
The other person's language, you speak Vietnamese or Spanish, the other one, you know what I'm saying?
No.
We don't speak each other's languages, no.
Do you speak your own language?
Jen barely speaks her own.
Do you speak Spanish?
I speak Spanish a little. I should say I understand it more than I speak it.
Same boat. Like, I understand, but I can't speak it. It takes me like 3 hours to formulate a sentence in my brain.
All right. So I mean, to me, I'm a food person. I think pork is a big commonality, both in Vietnamese and Puerto Rican cuisine.
Oh yeah.
Right.
We love the pig.
Yeah. So that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's the big one. I mean, I love, there's a Vietnamese pig ear salad that I fucking love. I forget what it's called, but oh my God, it's so good. And Puerto Rican, it's the pernil, mm-hmm. Right?
So good.
Yeah. Yeah, Benin. Yeah.
I'm a big food person. I went to cooking school and ran a restaurant for 4 years. So I think you learn a lot about a culture through their food.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. I think between food and music can bring you together, in my opinion, because there's no language there except for that.
I think that American music is so pervasive that you go to, I've traveled, I've been to about 60 different countries at this point in my life, right? And every country, no matter how big or how small, you go to some local bar where no one speaks English, but there's an American song on the radio. It's amazing how pervasive our music and entertainment has gone. But food, and also it's hard to get into a song if you don't understand a single word. But food is food. The big Vietnamese dish would be pho, mm-hmm. Right? Pho is probably your national dish. Is that right or am I wrong?
It's probably the most like popular in America, I guess.
Yeah, I guess in America. Is it shit on? Like when Vietnamese people say to Vietnamese people, Oh, I love pho. You're like, oh,
oh no, I love it too. I can eat it every day.
There's a Vietnamese sandwich shop in my neighborhood that does a pho sandwich, and it tastes like you're drinking the soup, sort of, but it's in a sandwich form. It's really cool. What? It's really good. And it's called the Pho Real.
I love all the pho restaurant names out here. It's like Pho Show is one of my favorites.
Yeah. Same thing with Thai restaurants. They'll do Thai one on, tie me up.
And... It's always nice discussing this kind of stuff with like someone who gets it, I guess. Like, we're in California, so we're obviously in the state of a lot of people who
really
would not agree with our opinions. And
California, you kind of get chastised. We're in California because like Los Angeles and that whole area, I consider with so like, you know, they say there's really two countries. There's New York, L.A., Miami, Chicago, and then the rest of the country, you know, where, or I say you include Austin and Seattle, like all the major cities, I feel, have a similar sensibility. And then you have the flyover states and the smaller areas of this, of the big states that are more, you know, Trump leaning or Republican leaning. And to me, I try to find, like, I want to be proven wrong all the time. I think it's nothing better than saying, you know what, I was fucking totally wrong on that. And I'd love to be, like when Trump became president, I had all the hope in the world that he was going to knock it out of the park. And then when COVID came, I remember in New York, I hated fucking Giuliani up until 9/11. And then I ended up really liking Giuliani because he took over and got the same now happened with Cuomo. I never liked Cuomo. He took over and I liked him. I'm willing to change my mind at a dime, but it just hasn't happened yet this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think especially with like the Trump thing, it's like, I remember having a conversation with someone, like, I'm not a political person. I'm one of those kind of people who's, I'm a skeptic when it comes to politics. It's, I consider it like religion, you know, it sounds like a nice idea, but the idea that everyone is actually working together and we all have a voice, I don't know, funny, there's something else going on in my
documentary. And I didn't even know this existed, but this happened rather in 1962 was the biggest North American earthquake ever. It happened in Alaska, right outside of, right in the heart of Anchorage in 1962. I know how well you know history, but Alaska was only a state for like 4 years at that point, and it was off the radar. And this big earthquake hit and shook the city, but the whole country got affected. And listening to these news reports and listening to the story on how everybody got together and rallied around, and it created a scientific principle on how when there's a crazy crisis, humanity tends to rally together and get on the same page to get through something. And this is the first time in history where it's become political and it's become divisive. The first time ever, where I remember in New York City, 9/11, it didn't matter if you were Republican or Democrat or Libertarian or just a child rapist. We all got to get through this, you know? So now that's just not the case. It's insane.
Yeah. No, it really is. It's a weird time. It's an odd time for sure. And I was going to say, it's like when Trump had gotten to office, you know, everyone was obviously against it as anyone who was Democrat. And I was like, you know, this is a guy who has been bankrupt, like what, 2-3 times. And at this point, but he keeps coming back. I'm like, he's got to know something. He's got
saved by the Apprentice, like, saved his financial career. That's for sure. And I think the one thing that it's always funny when he says, oh, my father only gave me $1 million. Also, when his casino was about to go out of business, it was like, I think it was like $8 million or $9 million in debt. I forget exactly. Miraculously, his father lost $9 million at the roulette table. Like, wow, what a coincidence. Oh. But I don't look at myself as Democrat. I think Biden is horrible. That fact that he said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. I mean, that is just the dumbest thing in the world. Like, did he think by the word ain't was going to make him have street cred? It's so stupid and embarrassing that his best thing he was doing for the last 3 months was shutting his fucking mouth. Now that he's opening his mouth, I'm afraid he's going to cost himself the election.
Yeah, but you know, I recently saw something that Andrew Schultz had talked about, like his craziness. It's like, if anything, he said it was a joke, but
yeah,
we voted for crazier, right?
But still, in this volatile world that we live in, he had to be smart enough to know, I probably shouldn't say this. You know what I mean? If he wasn't smart enough to say it, that's a bigger fucking problem.
That's why none of these guys seem qualified.
Anybody that wants to be president probably shouldn't be president.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially at the end of the day, like I always tell people, you don't really have the power that you think comes with it. You're not king shit. You know, it's just shit. Everyone else around you runs the country, not you. The
difference because of Twitter and because of his daily news updates and constantly being on, I mean, I think he's done more press conferences than any president ever. And I think it's because he realizes how many people do worship his voice and his rallies and stuff like that. So he has definitely affected the country in a way that I've never seen another president affect the country. Having said that, I remember my dad, when he was alive, said to me that he would have been alive through, I think it was, let's say it was 15 presidents. I don't remember how many it was. He was 85 or whatever it was when he passed away, 80, 82. He said, it's funny, every presidential election that I can remember, people were saying that the world was going to end. And the truth is, my life never really changed that much. And I think for most people, that can be true. Of course, if you are an immigrant who was pulled away from your kid because of these new laws or whatever, there's always going to be outsiders that, you know, ancillary people that their lives change. But I think the bulk of America, your life doesn't change that much. I really believe that.
I think I can honestly agree with that. All the presidents we've lived through, obviously, you know, we've only been around since the Reagan era, but it honestly hasn't been that
ever really changed. Have your, have you ever, like, whatever your normalcy at the time, was ever like all of a sudden, oh shit, I can't be out past 11 anymore because president whoever doesn't want Hispanic people out after midnight. You know, I mean, whatever the fuck, that's never happened. You know, there's never been a change so immense other than this, obviously, but this is not Trump's fault. I mean, I guess it can be looked at that way, but he didn't create this virus. So I don't really blame him for it. I blame that he didn't handle it well. But that being said, I wouldn't blame him on this, on the virus. And I think that other than this virus, my life never changed prior to an election or post an election. It was always kind of the same. But again, I'm a privileged white guy in New York, so that's just my perspective. That's all I could tell you.
Well, I have a white voice, so although, I guess, you know, I skim through
white, you know, but technically my mom's family's from Spain, my dad's family's from Syria, so I'm Middle Eastern and Spanish, so I'm like a double threat. But
oh shit,
I just look white, so it doesn't. And I'm only first gen. I'm second generation, so I'm relatively new to the country as well.
Yeah, it's like the only people I know who ever got affected, like my mom got affected because she works for the IRS. So she definitely had situations where like decisions were being made that were keeping her on a furlough, or she wasn't working at certain points because of whatever things that the bills they were putting into effect and stuff during the Trump administration. But like
government shutdowns,
but that's close.
Before, you know, and I don't think that's a fair assessment because a government shutdown, whenever you have the House controlled by one party and the Senate controlled by the other, there's going to be that.
Oh, for sure. It's just she's experienced it more now than ever before.
Right. And
also, they've been for longer things. And
he's
stuff,
also the first president where social media is everywhere. So he was the first president that makes policy decisions through a tweet.
Yeah. I mean, he's always been a publicity guy. So same time, I'm not surprised.
He's brilliant at that. He's a brilliant guy to keep people talking about things.
He's kind of perfect to cap this all off because, you know, we start talking about selling out. It's like the idea of selling out is just selling your soul for the big dollar. And it's like, if anyone's done it, it's him.
I firmly believe, like, it will end on this thought here, that he did not want to win. He wanted this to be a great way to promote his brand. And he thought it would be a close call, but he'd lose. I don't think he's been happy for a moment as the president.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think anyone is ever happy when they become president. I mean, everyone, like, you see that before and after shot from every president. It's like the last 4 years or last 8 years, they never look pretty.
Follow me. I am Ralph Sutton. Follow my show everywhere at the SDR show. We have Spencer Grammer on this week. JB Smooth from Curb Your Enthusiasm next week. Two really good episodes. And thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
You can find Beaver Rodeo on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, practically anywhere social media is found. Where people follow you, Jen?
Lazarus Trash Pit on Instagram and Twitter.
And of course, you can follow me as Nikolopolis, that's Nikolopolis, on Instagram and Twitter. And of course, if you want to check out our merch, you can hit up our artist shop, which is Nikolaz, Nikolaz, and Threadless, where you can get tees, mugs, throw pillows, towels.
Get your fat beaver merch.
Yeah, fat beaver merch.
Fat distressed beaver merch. He's very distressed.
He's seen some shit. Right? He came back.
He's lived
from the
a
war.
Life.
But you know, if you don't want any merch or anything, but you still want to hook us up and give us a few tips, hit up our coffee link and drop a few ducats in there. All the links are on our page on all of the episodes. Till next time, keep it slapping.
are you doing? Looking for beavers. Woo! All right. But...
Oh, I feel like a power in it.
Hey, you see that?
My dick's asleep.